SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, but it's actually already 11:15. John White, standing by, joining us from Santa Anita. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm looking out my window right here is from my office, which is a mile and a 16th from Santa Anita, and it's absolutely pouring. Just pouring right now. Good news forecast that I go by. Shows 0% chance of rain Wednesday, 0% chance of rain Thursday, 0% chance of rain Friday. However, 80% chance of rain Saturday.
Wow.
So that is something to keep in mind at this point, that we might get more rain this Saturday, which would be a real shame.
Huh. Well, and you know, yesterday Baffert joined us in the third hour, and we actually... We're a little late getting to him, but we got quite a bit of ground covered with him, including the work he's doing with Coliseum. I wanted him to talk about the bit that they're working on with him. They put a citation bit on him and trying to get this horse to respond to rider instruction. We caught up with Anuket, but he was worried. He had improbable over on the training track. And the horse got loose on the training track, and he let us know yesterday that it was raining again, and so he kept improbable off the main track. This is difficult. The timing is bad, and I was going to ask you if you had heard any news from the Sadler camp about Nolo Contesto, you know, scratching out of what was going to be an important confrontation with Mucho Gusto and with Gunmetal Gray in the Bob Lewis, and instead Mucho Gusto, you know, pretty much dominated from the front end. Some thoughts about Saturday on that front?
Well, I haven't heard anything on Nolo Contesto, although the horse he beat when he earned his maiden diploma certainly looked good over the weekend as Omaha Beach. I mean, he'd had a case of seconitis, and he certainly found a cure for that, whether it was the wet, sloppy track or the competition and or both. But, boy, I mean, going down the backside, he looked like he was just rolling along beautifully and got a 90 buyer. His buyer equaled Mucho Gusto's in the Robert B. Lewis. I was very impressed with that Omaha Beach. I think Richard Mandel has got something to be pretty excited about with that one. And that's not the only good three-year-old in that Mandela barn at this point. He's got that extra hope over there, too, that has certainly got a lot of ability, I think, and looked very good in the maiden victory earlier in the week. So all of a sudden, Bill Mott and Richard Mandela are making their presence felt on the Derby trail here. You mentioned Baffert. I just was looking at the NTRA three-year-old poll. How about Bob Baffert? He's got the number one game winner, number two improbable, and number four Mucho Gusto. Pretty good in early February to have 1-2-4. War of Will sitting at number three, Instagram number five, Nick's Go at six, Hidden Scroll seven, Signalman eight, Gunmetal Gray nine, and Tax 10. So that's the NTRA top three-year-old poll. And by the way, Baffert, I thought, has accomplished something that has really gotten very little notice in our game, and if we were in a different sport it would get a lot of attention, and that is, would Justify got the Eclipse Award as Horse of the Year. That was one thing, but he also, again, of course, not again, but Justify was named the three-year-old male champion. For Baffert, that was four in a row in terms of training three-year-old male champions, so that got my historical juices flowing. And no other trainer since the Daily Racing Form started voting for champions in 1937, and then during the Eclipse Awards era that began in 1971, no trainers had even back-to-back three-year-old male champions. So here's Baffert. He's got four in a row. No one else has even had two in a row. But more impressive to me than that, Baffert now has trained 9 3-year-old male champions. And I thought, my goodness, how does that stack up in the history books? Well, going back to 1937, there are just three trainers who have trained three. Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, Elliot Birch, and Dwayne Lucas. So those guys trained 3 3-year-old male champions. Baffert has trained 9. So, I mean, that is just, to me, phenomenal. I mean, it really is. When you start saying that you've done something 3 times more than Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, Elliot Birch, and Dwayne Lucas, just for starters, and there aren't that many trainers that have had 2. I mean, Les Barrera had 2, and Woody Stevens had 2, but no, not many going back to 1937 have had 2. Baffert's had 9. And yeah. Look at what he's sitting here this year. He's got number 1, 2, 4 currently in the NTRA poll. I mean, if you were to say who is the favorite right now to be training the 3-year-old male champion of 2019, there's no doubt the favorite would be Bob Baffert. If that were to happen, it'd be 5 in a row and 10 3-year-old male champions. So Baffert is really, I mean, we know he's won the 2 Triple Crowns, which, of course, that's the highest achievement we have in our game. So, I mean, but that gets all the recognition, and it deserves all the recognition. But Baffert's starting to accomplish so many things that some of these accomplishments are kind of slipping through the cracks, I think.
Well, the thing that's interesting just about this group of horses, I don't know if you picked up, you got to listen carefully to every time he visits.
Yep.
He says that there's certain things that you can pick up from him. I brought up Coliseum, and I was very interested in hearing him expound on what he's been doing in terms of the bit and the headgear. And I put up a picture this morning, a blow-up picture of the Coliseum's head and you know the bit that he was using. I asked Woodbury Payne, you know, what was involved in, you know, it's a citation bit and an overcheck, and you can see, you know, what the idea is, giving the rider, you know, the opportunity to, you know, to really control the head up and down in particular. He didn't really take the bit, so to speak, on explaining what he's doing with Coliseum. He did say he's dry. You could tell that Baffert's a little exasperated with Coliseum, but he unprompted. It's what he says unprompted that is notable. He said, "I've got Desmond in there too. Desmond's running in the San Vicente, and that should tell you everything you need to know. You know, that's the Union Rags for Sheikh Mohammed. Not that Sheikh Mohammed. The other, I think it's about on your Sheikh Mohammed scorecard. I think it's Sheikh Mohammed number 7 or 6. But it's the one with the yellow jacket with the maroon. I think no, the blue with the blue chevron. But I got a feeling Desmond is the San Vicente horse to focus on, the Florida bred.
Keeping track of those Sheikh Mohammeds can be as challenging almost as keeping track of those bases. At Coliseum, there's a lot of talent there. There's no question about it. He is a challenge for Baffert. But you mentioned Desmond, and he was very impressive in his maiden win, especially the way he kicked home that final furlong. And XBTV, I watched many of Desmond's workouts, and several of them were with the filly, Florida Lamar. And the one thing that impressed me about Desmond is about, a month and a half ago, Florida Lamar was just really, you could tell, vastly superior to Desmond. I mean, he was essentially overmatched against her. But as they continued to work as a team and they got closer to Desmond's first start, that gap closed, and Desmond was doing much better against Florida Lamar as he got right before his first race. So he's on the improve. And here we go with Baffert again. There's another one. You know, I mean, it's like the New York Yankees or Murderers Row over there. And that Florida Lamar, I mean, this is an extremely exciting filly. I know they're very high on her at that barn. And, I mean, she had the most anticipated debut here in Southern California, really since Justify, as far as just buzz and so forth. And she didn't get that big of a buyer, 78, but, I mean, you know, she won just, it was like a workout for her. So, you know, again, the fact that Desmond was working, but working better as he was coming along against Florida Lamar, I think shows that this Desmond is just someone to really watch out for. So it's interesting that you picked up on that. And that's the thing about Baffert. There's clues when you, if you listen carefully to him, there oftentimes are clues. I mean, think of Justify about this same time last year when he burst on the scene with that maiden win, and Mike Willman asked him in the winner's circle afterwards, you know, is it too late for the Kentucky Derby? And Baffert said, I've got a plan, which kind of really floored me since I'd already got a future book bet on him. And because I was thinking when I made the future book bet on Justify, I was probably throwing my money away because of the fact that Justify was late to the party. He hadn't raced as a two-year-old, and Baffert had just had, you know, Arrogate and West Coast come along the previous 2 years that didn't run as two-year-olds, that he took his time with them, didn't go through the Triple Crown, and then ended up with the three-year-old male champion. So I kind of thought he'd probably do the same thing with Justify, but when Baffert said right there, I've got a plan, it was like, wow, maybe the Derby's in play for this guy, the Kentucky Derby, and it certainly was in play as you were here visiting us in Southern California for the allowance. I believe you were here for the allowance win, right?
Yes.
And then the Santa Anita Derby.
Right. All I missed was, yeah, all I missed was his debut.
The maiden win, yeah. So, and that Santa Anita Derby, you know, there's a performance that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. I mean, how many times do you see a horse with only two races under his belt win a race the caliber of the Santa Anita Derby and defeat a pretty darn good horse at the time in Bolt de Oro? So, you know, as I look out the window and see this rain coming down, just pouring, two of the best training jobs I've ever seen in my lifetime. One was Laz Barrera with Affirmed in 1978, because you had Affirmed at Santa Anita and you had Alidar back east. And we had an extremely wet winter in Southern California that year. I wasn't living here at the time, but I know it was one of the wettest on record. And Barrera was really, to try to train Affirmed up to the Triple Crown that year was really tough. And yet he, of course, and then he had one of the toughest rivals that a horse would ever have to face in the Triple Crown in Alidar. And so what Laz was able to do through the wet weather with Affirmed, and see, it's lost in time that people don't realize that Barrera kind of had a hand tied behind his back in terms of being able to train Affirmed because of the bad weather. And yet there was Laz. That's why he was one of the great trainers of all time, for sure, to pull this off with Affirmed. And somewhat similarly was Baffert with American Pharoah, because American Pharoah had missed the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, went on the shelf, and it wasn't until February 2nd that he had his first workout of the year, 3 furlongs and 36 and change. But it's forgotten again, we had an extremely wet winter here that year in Southern California. So not only was Baffert kind of coming along a little, I mean, there really couldn't be any hiccups. You hear Johnny D talk a lot on your show. He doesn't like even the slightest hiccup here on the Derby trail, and that certainly was the case for American Pharoah from the standpoint that he didn't get his first workout of the year in the books until February 2nd, and then Baffert was having to try to dodge the bad weather and when the main track would be closed so much and so forth. So to be able to not only win the Kentucky Derby with that horse, but then win the Triple Crown, of course, the thing is, we're talking about great horses here, too. I mean, horses that are superior equine athletes. and that's what something you hear from Baffert a lot, that he'll tell you that that's what he's looking for, these superior athletes that can do these things like what Justify did. I mean, to go into the Kentucky Derby and win that race on that wet track like he did, then the Preakness when he had, you know, good magic, just taking it right to him right away and packing him out to the middle of the track on the backside in the fog, and then winning the Belmont to come through the Triple Crown. Don't forget, you know, he came out of that, you know, he had a foot problem along the way there in the Triple Crown briefly, and so, I mean, Baffert, with again, what he's done. So those two Triple Crown sweeps not only were tremendous, but especially when we had such rainy weather in Southern California that the trainers had to sit here and deal with. And it's not easy because, like I say, you get a lot of tracks that you don't want to send the horse out there, and you get a lot of tracks where the track's even closed, or you have to send him to the training track or this type of thing. So that's why, I mean, guys like Laz Barrera and Bob Baffert are among the all-time greats in the training profession of thoroughbred racing.
Looking at, looking forward to tomorrow's draw for the Saturday cards. Actually, we'll have to wait till Thursday because the San Vicente is on Sunday. The Desmond, a lot of people, and this is only 7/8, but I will keep a close eye. This is a Union Rags out of a trippy mare, but the mare herself, you know, went a route aground, and her dam, sister to Smoke and Frolic, who was a tremendous stake mare, and there's reason to believe that there's plenty of upside yet. You know, looking at Desmond, so we'll put that field together. We've also, I suppose, John, now with the concern for the weather, the rescheduled, delayed turf races might still be imperiled. So we'll see what the racing office does on that front. A couple of thoughts, anything to add while we're on the three-year-old front? Some thoughts about the Withers result and the Holy Bull. What was your take there?
Well, it was a very disappointing performance for Maximus Mischief because, I mean, he was so... had looked so good in his first three races. I mean, and that Ramson was a very good win. But, I mean, now that's starting to look maybe that he had it all his own way for the most part in that Ramson. But, you know, you don't want to be too harsh off of one race either. And Butch Reed is saying that maybe he didn't have him quite tight enough. And, you know, he did wash out before the race. And it's not like he got buried. He only got beat a length and a half. On the other hand, the race came back in terms of the buyer on the modest side. So, you know, that's a concern, you know, because you'd figure that maybe the way, in terms of the final time of the race and the buyer, that Maximus Mischief, if he was the horse that he was looking like he might be, could bring his B game and win the race. And that was not the case here. And this Harvey Wallbanger, I mean, he's an honest horse here, I think. But I thought Harvey Wallbanger really flatters Signalman here, because I think between the two at this particular point, Signalman is clearly the better of the two. Now, things can change rapidly here early in the year. That you've always got to keep that in mind. These three-year-olds, some of them are going to really blossom and others are not. And so, you know, it's not like Harvey Wallbanger can't here put it together and really, you know, move forward and blossom. But at this point, Signalman, who won the Kentucky Jockey Club as the one from that barn. And it was interesting to hear McPeak on your show, I thought, because I certainly got my eyebrows raised when I saw that workout at Gulfstream by Signalman. I just thought, wow, all of a sudden he's working 46 and change? I mean, I went, wow. And it was interesting, McPeak saying he wasn't pleased about that. And it was a goof up there, and that you know, fortunately, they've got plenty of time here before the Fountain of Youth. I mean, it reminds me of when Precisionist, the Monday, or it might have been Tuesday, but I think it was the Monday before the Santa Anita Handicap in 1986, went out and worked a mile in like 134 and change or 135 and change. I mean, it was just something that it was, you know, it was like, oh my gosh. But the problem there is you're sitting right on top of the Santa Anita handicap, you know, that same week. And when Precisionist got to the quarter pole, he was sitting right behind a horse that was over 150-1. That was the first Santa Anita handicap chart I called for the racing form. And her rat for John Franks and Jack Vanberg was leading at, a, like I say, at over 150-1. And it looked like, you know, you expect a Precisionist to go right by this little Herat, who is this little Northern Dancer colt. And instead, Herat said goodbye to Precisionist, because Precisionist's gas tank was basically empty at that point, and it stemmed mainly from that messed up workout earlier in the week. And that's one reason where Bob Baffert, through the years, I mean, he has had probably the fewest number of messed up workouts of any of the top trainers here in California, going back to when he first started talking to these riders during the workouts. And I remember Gary Jones, who would go running down to the rail. I would be standing with Gary Jones, and he'd go, you know, we'd be talking, and he'd have his stopwatch in his hand, and we'd be sitting and standing in front of the grandstand, and like Lakeway or somebody would be working, and they'd get to the top of the stretch, and Jones would say, oh, she's going too fast, or she's going too slow, and he'd run right down to the rail and start yelling at the rider and waving his arms. And Baffert certainly came up with a better plan than that in terms of being able to talk to these guys, because, you know, especially when you're close to a race, boy, if the work gets screwed up, I mean, that can really impact the performance in the race. So, like I say, that 46 and change, I thought, wow, what is going on there? And my suspicions were confirmed that it wasn't what McPeak was looking for in terms of that it was too fast. But like I say, we got plenty of time to the Fountain of Youth, so that's not the end of the world there for him. But so I thought that flattered him. And for Mucho Gusto, I thought that really flattered Improbable, because while Mucho Gusto is a very nice colt, and he's a mucho macho man, so he's going to, I don't think distance is a problem for him. And remember, Mucho Macho Man was a June foal, and he was a kind of a late bloomer. He won the Breeders' Cup late in his life. And so I think we're only scratching the surface here with this Mucho Gusto. But at this point, when he ran against Improbable in the Los Alamitos Satirity, I mean, it was no contest. Improbable just drilled him. So, you know, Mucho Gusto, to me, at this point, has got to, you know, continue to move forward to catch up to Improbable. And I mean, Baffert sitting there with Game Winner and Improbable over there. I mean, you talk about a powerful 1-2 punch in my book. I mean, that is extremely strong. And then Instagram is really coming along here very nicely. I was wondering about the San Vicente as a possibility for him. And so it was interesting when Baffert told you that yesterday, that he said that, you know, maybe he'll show up in there. So you can, that shows the respect that Baffert has for Instagram, that he's watching him that closely. And boy, you remember back to those two wins last summer by Instagram were just breathtaking, really, I thought. So whether or not he shows up in the San Vicente, I've heard, you know, through the grapevine that they're looking for the San Felipe. So, you know, whether he pops up in that San Vicente, I don't know. But, boy, if it turns out that Instagram makes his 2019 debut in the San Felipe in early March, that's on March, as I look at the calendar, March 9th, and Game Winner is pointing for that race, man, what a race that would be if you had both the undefeated Game Winner and the undefeated Instagram in that race, both of them making their first start of the year. So we'll have to see if that turns out to be the case, or maybe this Instagram does show up in the San Vicente for Hollendorfer.
Improbable looking, apparently, toward the Rebel, possibly, right now as the goal. John, let me finish up and get Jeremy Plonk in here for Countdown to the Crown. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you from Vegas on Monday.
So it's good. By the way, one quick thing I wanted to say, listening to McPeak yesterday, I heard a name I hadn't heard in a long time, Otto Draper. And I went, wow, Otto Draper's an assistant for McPeak. And, man, I remember watching Otto Draper as a jockey in the Northwest in the 1970s. And I went last night and digging through old racing forms. 1979 at LeBois Park in Idaho, apprentice Gary Stevens wins the seventh race on a horse called Bogus Basin, and in the very next race is Otto Draper riding on Smokelfire. So that I just went, wow. And Otto, by the way, speaking of Kentucky Derbies, was the regular exercise rider for a filly who won the Kentucky Derby, winning colors for Dwayne Lucas. So and I thought that was interesting, though, that Mapique, in talking about how key it is for him to have older, very experienced people that he can rely on, and in that Mapique can't be like at five places at the same time, and he has to be able to trust these people. And the people that have a wealth of experience are people that he likes to go to, and people like Otto Draper.
Yeah, Draper looking after the horses at Maydan in Dubai, and back at it tomorrow, actually.
From Idaho,
John, thanks
Dubai.
A lot. Yeah, there you go. There you go. I love it. John White, everybody. Post time, John, and hope that weather does not impact Saturday and Sunday, because you'll have quite a few of the West Coast players that are undoubtedly looking closely toward their not just the obligatory races, the mandatories. Santa Anita always part of the mandatories, but a lot of the optional races. So if the weather is problematic again, I didn't even think to look in California. I looked at all, everywhere else looks good. So, all right, well, this is what it is, right? Let's take a break, and we'll get to Jeremy Plonk next. Countdown to the crown.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why?
Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Where's your head at?
back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 10, 12 minutes to fill out on this busy Tuesday, which went by real fast. Your action today, Louisiana Downs, Mahoning Parks, Portland Meadows, Sunland and Turf Paradise. And speaking of parks, how about yesterday? In the you can't make it up category, the Patriots win the Super Bowl, and you had the horse win yesterday in Philadelphia. How about them Pats? And last year, I think the day before the Super Bowl at Santa Anita, you had a horse gonna fly now, the Rocky theme title, win at Santa Anita before the Eagles won. It's just ripped from today's headlines. Jeremy Plonk joins us. Countdown to the crown and horseplayernow.com. Good morning.
Good morning. Hope it was a good Super Bowl for everyone, and that scoring wasn't your thing.
Yeah, please don't get me started. It was mind numbing. Jeremy, we had obviously a busy Saturday. We were anticipating it when we talked last week, and everybody will read your final thoughts about three preps later in the week when the Friday edition drops, but some thoughts about what we saw Saturday.
Well, the winning Kentucky Derby trip over the last several years, really from California Chrome on, has been a first over, a length and a half off the lead, sitting second, preferably maybe third, and pouncing. And in this era with no sprinters in the Kentucky Derby, that trip has kind of been carved and worked out well. You have to earn that trip. And what we saw in the three preps this weekend, in the major prep races, is three horses got those exact trips. Two of them won. The one that didn't was Maximus Mischief, who sat second, a length and a half or so off the single pace setter. And he was the one most expected by, you know, the public, obviously, as an odds-on favorite, of punching home in that trip. And he wasn't able to do it. And so that makes it kind of doubly disappointing in that that's what you want to see in a Derby horse. In the modern era, that is the Derby-winning trip. Tax got that same trip sitting behind Not That Brady, got it done in the Withers, ran that right kind of race. Mucho Gusto sat right behind Magnificent McCool, was able to win and take that first over trip, even with stout fractions in that race. Mucho Gusto was able to power home and win the Bob Lewis. So, you know, what we want to see right now is, can horses do what it takes to win the Kentucky Derby? And what we know is that trip that wins the Derby right now consecutively, you know, from 2014 on, has been a length and a half off the lead, sitting second or third. And Maximus Mischief wasn't able to do that at Gulfstream. And it's only going to get tougher from here out. So that was kind of a really bad sign, I think.
Well, you might very well have hit on it, and I think there's a couple of reasons that, you know, he deserves every follow-up chance, Butchie Reed, I think, was a little shaken by, you know, the way this unfolded. He didn't like the way he looked going out on the tracks, that he, you know, had gotten washy, and that had not been him previously. So, you know, you can give him a mulligan, but and certainly if we think back to a horse like Irish War Cry, in fact, in recent years, Irish War Cry, you know, had a miscue in Florida and then snapped back. So, and he was actually...
This is not to say the horse can't go on and become a really good stakes horse at a mile and a 16th or a mile and an 8th, but if you're looking for Kentucky Derby, you know, a mile and a quarter, and the trip you need to do, and if nerves and being unraveled at Gulfstream Park on Holy Bull Day was an issue, that's another thing you don't want to see in your camp heading towards the Kentucky Derby. So if the reason he ran poorly was, one, he rejected the trip, or two, it was an emotional issue, Well, it ain't going to get any easier the first Saturday of May at a mile and a quarter with 20 horses, with that crowd, with the long pre-race pomp and circumstance that goes with it. I like him a lot. He could come back and win the Fountain of Youth. He could come back and win the Wood Memorial. I would not be shocked by that. I just think for a Kentucky Derby prospect, those were two really tough things to swallow. And I love the horse. I had him ranked number two coming in. I was all into him to the point that I thought this race set up for a closer. And as I wrote in Countdown to the Crown, the closer to watch in the race was Harvey Wallbanger. I picked him second in the race. I played exact as Maximus Mischief with Harvey Wallbanger. I didn't play Harvey Wallbanger. I thought Maximus Mischief was that much better than them, and I thought the heavy exacta, you know, with those two, was the way to attack the race. Turns out, it did melt down. Pace does make the race in almost all accounts, and Harvey Wallbanger took excellent advantage of being the only closer in the race that looked like it could fall apart a little bit. I didn't expect Maximus Mischief to give it back.
Some thoughts, East Coast, West Coast, New York, California.
Tax looks like a decent horse. You know, I don't think he's a world beater, but I think he's a pretty decent horse. To come home the final three furlongs in the Withers in 38-3, that's not that bad because they went the first six in 111-2, so it's not like they went 113, 114 and walked home. I mean, they went faster to the last three furlongs of the Withers than they did the Swale at seven furlongs. Now, that tells you the Swale was really slow late, but the Withers wasn't too bad late. So a good effort from Tax in there. He didn't beat anything. It's going to get way tougher, we know, when the Gotham and the Wood Memorial roll around, but he's a nice horse for Danny Gargan. And out west, Mucho Gusto, I mean, pace-wise, you know, it looked like he'd probably be low in speed in there, but Magnificent McCool really wanted it under Flavian Pratt. They went gunning out there. It was nice to see him sit just off, pounce, and go on. But as John White just mentioned, Improbable really handled Mucho Gusto, you know, kind of held him at bay, you know, at arm's length in the race at Los Alamitos. It's a different track and a long stretch run, so, you know, maybe... You know, maybe on a different kind of oval that race turns out a little different. We'd have to see. But Mucho Gusto, you know, did he jump up past Improbable off of that effort? No, I don't think so. Gunmetal Gray's a horse who I think is going to be solid but not spectacular, and he kind of did his thing from coming off the pace. The thing I worry about, though, is on a track like what we saw at Santa Anita on Saturday, you know, you had the horse pull up Kid Cantina in the race. Gunmetal Gray came back with some burned down feet and some sores. You know, how do they come out of this race? It's really a watch the work tab situation. You want to see Mucho Gusto back in, you know, 10, 14 days, something like that, to the workout tab and what it'll do. It really reminded me, and I write about this in Countdown. I wrote the review of the race yesterday, and you'll see it in Friday's edition. This really reminded me a lot of Consolidators win in the San Felipe. Go Google that when YouTube it back in 2005. Consolidator was a horse for Dwayne Lucas who really took to a wet track, ran a race like this, but was never the same again. And that's what I'm a little bit afraid of with Mucho Gusto. How does he come out of this race? It'll be interesting moving forward, but he's fast. He can handle that first over trip. He's in the right hands. He's got the great pedigree. Mucho Macho Man, no reason why he can't go on. There's nothing not to like as long as he keeps moving forward.
Some thoughts, Jeremy, before we talk about the Sam Davis and the San Vicente, any thoughts about, you know, some of those maiden winners and some of the other, you know, non-stake players, including the performance, the anticipated performance of Omaha Beach. That was kind of a long time coming, but I'm sure that Mandela will jump him into state company. And of course, Mandela and Samantha Siegel, they got to be excited as well because the Hope, I'm going to forget his first, Extra Hope, is Extra Hope? Clearly a horse that's going to get a stake bow.
Yeah, and you know what? When we're looking for somebody else on the West Coast, I mean, you know, Baffert's got a bunch, you know, Hollendorfer's got a bunch. Doug O'Neill's kind of trying to find the right horse. Horse for Doug O'Neill to keep an eye on named Stubbins. He won on the turf, sprinting, but that race has come back to be really key. Stubbins has some third form. I wouldn't be shocked if you see Stubbins make some noise somewhere down the line below that cusp in California. But the two that you talked about from Mandela, very impressive last week. You know, Omaha Beach on the really wet track that always, you know, that always inflates the win margin. We talk about that almost every single week on your show. But that was an impressive nibbler breakout, as we like to say. You know, second, bam. And then when they win, they just blow the seal off the darn thing. Nolo Contesto, the horse who beat him last time, was the one who scratched out of the Lewis because of the track condition. His form obviously flattered by the performance there of Omaha Beach. And like you said, you know, next stop for that one would be Stakes Company. Definitely, I think, one that we want to keep an eye on. You know, and we've seen so many nice ones at Gulfstream, Hidden Scroll, Country House, Global Campaign. But I think Omaha Beach is when it's Santa Anita is probably the best we've seen on the West Coast in the maiden ranks, and probably the best we've seen outside of Gulfstream Park. I thought that was pretty impressive. Extra Hopes Allowance Win, I think that one ranks up there. So Alive, Owendale, Bourbon War, some horses we've seen that look really good in Allowance Company. Extra Hope is right up in that category, so on that next step up to what we see in the allowance ranks. And, you know, it should be another good week for that. You've got the Half the Monomoy Girl debuting in Maiden Company this week for Brad Cox at Oaklawn Park. And, you know, it'll be interesting as we see. We've got a couple more weeks yet to kind of announce yourself. You know, we're in the justified time zone, I guess, if you will, from last year. You know, I mean, you don't want to be any later than this, but some of these horses will have a maiden win this time of year. They're not too far out of it in the current landscape.
Well, very quickly, Jeremy, about a minute, we've got Tampa to look forward to. Sam Davis, not a big group, it looks like.
No, you know, who shows up? Kentucky Wildcat's a horse I'm really interested in for Tom Albertrani. I think he's going to end up in this spot. And his running lines as a two-year-old were all form flattered. You know, you say, why do you look at all these maiden and allowance races? They were trying to figure out who beat whom and what it means from their two-year-old years. I think Kentucky Wildcat's one of the more flattered horses we've seen in his past running line. So that's one to keep an eye on. You know, will Nick Go make the comeback for Ben Colebrook in this spot? You know, So Alive for Todd Fletcher. Will this one, the half, the Vino Rosso, come back after the allowance win, or will they await the Tampa Bay Derby? Curious to see the entries there at Tampa. They'll draw Wednesday for Saturday there on their traditional draw schedule. You know, and will anybody step up out of the race we haven't seen? Still dreaming, a horse for Graham Motion's listed as possible for that race. Was a really nice winner at Laurel, and this is a horse with a lot of pedigree. Graham's run some horses through the Mid-Atlantic in their maiden ranks, you know, of course, based at Fair Hill. So they take the short van ride sometimes for the easier spot and to just start developing in their career. But I think Still Dreaming is a horse who's got some talent. So some potential there at Sam in the Sam F. Davis at Tampa. And, you know, that's a race that usually catches our attention because it's alone on the schedule, other than the San Vicente on Sunday. And as John White mentioned on your show earlier, if Instagram shows up there, then we've got an instant marquee horse because I think he's one of the ones.
Now, Sam Davis, Nick's Go, Cave Run, Five Star General, Kentucky Wildcat, So Alive, and Well Defined, the names being included. And as Mike Trombetta told you here weeks ago, his inclination was to wait for the Tampa Bay Derby with win for Mrs. Weber. And that's the way it looks there. Jeremy, you'll have this week's edition of Countdown to the Crown out on Friday. Pull it up, horseplayernow.com or countdowntothecrown.com. And we'll be back tomorrow and get ready to head to Vegas. But Wednesday brings in, of course, a visit with Sid Fernando. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale Farm. And we'll have, I think, Dr. Allday tomorrow as well and more. Seth Merrow, he'll be in Vegas. Everybody's coming to Vegas. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.